Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello!
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show we have one of our kind of new friends, but I'm really excited to get to know him, Mr. Dustin Rapier.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, Dustin.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
How are you feeling on this kind of allergy warm Monday, you know, February morning?
I woke up sounding like Darth Vader this morning, pounded some coffee, sat in front of my therapy light for a good 15-20 minutes, mm-hmm. So we're feeling extra perky.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about what a therapy light is.
It's like one of those like full spectrum, it's probably all just, you know, a bunch of bull crap, but you set it on your desk and it's like full spectrum lighting, turn it on, it's supposed to sit in front of it for like 20 minutes. Yeah, it's supposed to like regulate your circadian rhythms, which I was not aware that I had.
I'm a pretty big believer in accidental placebos.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Where I'm like, yeah, I take a vitamin D every day now, and I feel like I could conquer the world. It's probably just fish oil crap.
Oh, like, absolutely. I can trick myself into doing anything, honestly.
Well, I mean, isn't that like the way it works, though? Like, if you believe it, then that's all that matters, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, and I think
the mind is a very powerful thing.
Of people about how, you know, the SAD, the seasonal affective disorder.
Right.
But it is real and
deep.
And we've had like two pretty rough winters in a row. And I'm just like, get me out of this nonsense.
Yeah, for sure. I just got back from Mexico and it was just like the vitamin D intervention that I needed.
Yep.
When did you get back from Mexico?
On Tuesday, actually.
Cool. So, nice.
Yeah. What did you go to Mexico for?
Just a fun trip. Me and some guys went down, and you know, I hadn't been in a while. I used to go every year for New Year's, and you know, it seems like there's always like that big Kansas City delegation that just kind of you know, flies in and out over the course of these winter months. And
so I know pretty much someone who is going there like every week right now.
Right.
My friend Mitch just got back.
Yeah. If you don't see your friends out there in Mexico, more than likely at this point.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's amazing. So, Dustin, how the hell did you get to the couch today?
Oh, so my parents met in college, and that... No, okay.
Everyone is always so sassy with that answer, and I love it.
Yeah, I listened to a couple of...
A side note.
But yeah, no, so my journey to the couch, it's been quite a journey. I've been kind of out of the game for a while. You know, I used to do music around town quite a bit. But just with my day job, it required me to be on the road, you know, pretty much every week for like the last 5 years. And so that just kind of made music impossible and really unsustainable. And I kind of got in a situation where, you know, I had scheduled gigs and I started having to cancel things. And I'm just like, I don't want to be that person. And so I just kind of like took a break and I was like, yeah, I'll just focus on writing, you know, while I'm on the plane and stuff like that. And kind of just kept music on the back burner for a while. But now I'm in a position that is demanding in different ways, but it allows me to stay home a lot more.
Are you from Kansas City?
I grew up in Northwest Arkansas, actually. Moved here after college. And that's really when I started digging into music. Like, I had some friends that were part of, you know, kind of the recording engineering program in school. And so I would, you know, steal their keys to, you know, get into the recording.
Right.
That's kind of how I got my feet wet. And I just fell in love with the whole process. And so I put some music out back then, moved up to Kansas City, and found a modicum, you know, modicum of success here. But then things just got busy. And so now I've just kind of been finding my way back and rediscovering my love for music, writing a new EP. And so, yeah, working on
where do you work
around that.
What pays your bills today when you're not making music?
Healthcare technology. So I work with oncology clinics. My territory is the West Coast, so I've got about 15 oncology practices that I work with between the West Coast, Alaska, and Puerto Rico. And so I do a lot of that remotely, just at home, but then I travel out, you know, about once a month to check on stuff. Mm-hmm, so it's like account management, a little bit of IT, a little bit of therapist, a little bit of punching bag. So it's fun, a lot of different hats.
Did you always sort of know that you were going to land into that, or how did you fall into that
world? I was a finance major. Okay. And so once I graduated, I took this job. This was like during the financial crisis, nobody was hiring. And so like I took the first job I can find working at this financial services company and just absolutely hated every second of it. I was like, why did I study 4 years for this awful hellacious, like, is this the rest of my life? Like, no, ma'am, I'm good. So the only other place that was hiring was another large technology healthcare player here in town. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name.
You can. But you can say anything you want.
Cerner. Everybody works there.
Everyone I know works there.
Yeah. So I worked for them for a while and then wound up falling in love with just the whole healthcare environment and just, you know, the technology piece. That's always something that's come pretty easily to me. And so, yeah. So now I wound up into this just, you know, totally by accident, and I absolutely love it, and it's kind of allowed me to be able to come back to music, which is nice. I feel like I've finally worked my way into a place where I can kind of have the best of both worlds, sure. Which is nice. Yeah. Maybe you can have it all.
Maybe. That's right. How old were you when you wrote your first song?
Ooh. Wow. Like, first song?
Yeah.
Probably, like, 5 years old. Like, my family's all super musical. Like, my dad is a music pastor at a church I grew up at. My mom, was kind of a professional pianist. She's got arthritis now. It's kind of sad. She doesn't play hardly anymore. But she taught me everything. Yeah. She taught me how to play the piano. My dad's like an amazing singer. And so, you know, just growing up around that, it was just a super creative environment. And so, first song I banged out was probably like 5 years old, just tinkering around on the piano. And my dad would make fun of, you know, like in that proud way, he would like hum it around the house all the time. Just like, you know, and I'd be like, "Dad, stop!" And it's just like, "That's my life's work.
That's my life's work. I put all 5 years of my life into this moment.
You don't understand me." Yeah. So, but first, like legit actual song was probably I wrote my high school graduating classes song. It's called "Not Goodbye," and it's actually on my first album that I ever did. And it's the most played song that I've ever done, so maybe I should have stopped after that one. But,
that's so funny. Yeah, I always kind of feel like whenever I talk to artists that are writers or, you know, musicians or whatever, that they talk about how they started. They almost couldn't help it when they were a kid.
Yeah, it's like compulsory. And I think, especially in college, when I really started going through some stuff and kind of, you know, discovering who I was and, like, you know, just really wrestling with a lot of, you know, those kind of coming-of-age questions, that's really when I started, you know, exploring the writing piece of it. Because I would always, you know, whenever I would come home from school, I'd sit down and just play the piano, and I was more interested in the musicality and less in the lyrics. But I think the more I kind of made writing a practice and just kind of a daily exercise, that kind of, you know, it became therapeutic. And, you know, at this point, it's just like I have to do that in order to, I mean, it's self-care at this mm-hmm. point. And then sometimes other people get to benefit from it, so.
Yeah, and so that's interesting that you say that, like, that is self-care. Is there ever a time where that feels like it's not self-care? Like, it's almost like driving you crazy in a different way, or a not healthy portion because it's such a part of your soul?
Yeah, I think, for me, it's interesting because it can kind of go both ways. Like, if I get really kind of hyper-focused and it gets to the point where I'm, like, obsessive and I can't, like, get out of the studio, I mean, it's like I'm really hyper-productive, but then, you know, go a couple days without showering and, you know, friends kind of like, "Are you okay, buddy?"
You're like, "Yeah, I'm writing my manifesto."
Right, exactly. I'm like, I'm having this amazing manic moment. Just leave me alone. Like, just set some food outside my door. I'll be fine. But then there's other times where I'm totally just, like, disillusioned and just not engaged in the process at all. And it's just, like, you know, sometimes I'll force myself to sit down and just try and make it more of like a cerebral kind of, you know, it has to come from a certain place, I think. You know, if you try and come at it with the wrong approach, it just kind of wears you out in a different way, if that makes sense.
How many albums have you created?
Two. So I've got Songs About No One, which I put out in college, and then Spectrum, which I put out, I think, in 2012, 2013?
After our little brainstorming date, I definitely went and started listening to all of your music.
So. Oh, God.
which we'll talk about that brainstorming date in a minute. Yeah, so that is so great. Yeah, we have, here at the Arts Asylum, we obviously have 26 kind of individual artists as well as different producing companies that come through our facility. And so I always love to kind of see each one of their ebb and flows as they kind of come through the building sometime. There's a couple of times where I feel like all 26 are here and they're creating, and there's this magic. It's almost like the image in my head is the movie Sleeping Beauty, whenever all the witches are turning things in pink and you see it coming
out of
the smokestack or whatever. And then there's other times when it's very cold and like no one is creating because they've hit their seasonal depression or the holidays are coming up. And it's a complete, like, juxtaposition yeah. to what we normally can have here, where, say, yesterday, there was 400 people in the building because right. we had a show going on. A lot of the artists were here for some reason, and we started rehearsals for a new show mm. in the basement. And so then there's those other days where yeah. I'm like, the building literally cannot right. contain itself.
Yeah, oh my yeah. god.
Mm-hmm. So I love kind of hearing other people like yourself talk about that that even happens.
Yeah.
When you're sitting in your own studio.
Oh my god, yeah, and it's so affirming to hear that, like, I'm not the only person that this happens to, because I feel like, especially today, you know, everything is so curated, you know, you just constantly see people creating and putting new stuff out there, and you're just like, oh my god, what am I even doing, right. you know? Mm-hmm. It's just like, I wrote two lines, and I'm, you know, patting myself on the back, and then, you know, you've got people like, I opened a theater, and I'm like, okay, great, you know?
Right. But nice that work. Is maybe the culmination of 25 years of their work
oh, absolutely.
To get to that.
Yeah. yeah, and it's totally a headspace thing, and I need to get out of it and stop, you know, comparing myself and just do my thing. Because, you know, whenever I'm in my lane, that's when I do the best. Mm-hmm. I don't compare myself to other people, and, you know.
I was having a conversation with someone over the weekend. Sorry if you're listening, and I forgot who it was. that they essentially saying that the more that they try to alter what they were doing... Mm-hmm. Oh, it was the... Pop Culture Sculptures. It's our Balloon Boys. Because there are other balloon companies that are sort of coming up or ones that have different sort of purposes. And we were spending some time talking yesterday, probably, about how they realized that they had to stay in their lane. That as they were starting to look peripherally at what some of the people were doing, they found that their work was sort of being affected in different ways.
Right.
Or that they were like, we don't really actually want... to do that, it's just that seems to be where the money is right now. And they were kind of having that internal conversation about, do we stick to what we are good at, knowing that by the end someone will want that, or do we start to alter ourselves just to make a buck?
Well, that's the problem. When you create a business out of your work, it becomes a whole other deal. Because you can be, and especially in the age of, like, the Instagrams and the Pinterests and the things that you're just like, well, this is what you do. Do this. And it's like, well, but that's not really what I do.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, you have that, Courtney. I mean, you are a jewelry designer and that is not what you do.
No, yeah. Day. Well, and that's, I
but
mean,
it's in your head all the time.
Right. It's the hard part about I create for myself. Yeah. And that is not the way that most artists work, or I wouldn't say most. I would say that there's, you know, there are various reasons why people create. And for me, it's to get shit out of my head. It's my therapy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not really for a customer or for, which is why it can't really be a business. I mean, it can. It just has to be very specific, and and people have to really kind of search out, these are the artists that I'm looking for. I want this person to write me a song. Mm-hmm. Well, don't, you know, if your genre isn't, I really want it to be like a rock, blah, 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 but I've gone to a folk artist. Well, don't do that.
Right, exactly.
You're setting them and you up to fail.
Yeah, this is not Burger King.
Right.
Like, you did not get it your way. Like
exactly.
And that's kind of an interesting thing, because I have a what I will call my tiny peanut gallery of people that I like to talk to before I have a guest on. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm just like, so I'm having this person on, and I sort of give, like, their little biography or whatever, and then I'm like, what are some things that you would want to know? You know, that's kind of my pool. No, it's not really that. So there's a couple of questions that are internally in there. Speaking of doing art for someone else, that's a great segue for me. So do you ever have someone come to you and say, I need you to write a song for this event, or, you know, or you said your high school graduation or whatever, how do you curate yourself into what they want? As, like, Courtney can make, like, a piece of jewelry sometimes, but she is almost, like, sometimes, almost duplicating what someone else did.
Right.
Because someone's like, well, I really like that stamp state necklace.
Right.
Can
for
you
sure.
do that in your way? Or you, Courtney, make this avant-garde piece and hope that someone will want to maybe purchase it.
Yeah.
Yours seems to be kind of a specific, you know, that people are coming to you and almost saying, I need this feeling. And so how do you kind of work with those people whenever they come up to you for what I will call commission work for your version?
So I haven't done a ton of, like, necessarily just, like, outright commission work like that, but I have, you know, done, people have come to me with lyrics and been like, hey, can you think of a good melody for this? And, like, that's the kind of stuff that I love, because, like, taking somebody else's, you know, because words are so special and precious, and I feel like if you have them kind of just, like, on paper and there's no real vision or idea of, well, not no, but,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of a, it's, musically, it's a blank canvas, and so you can kind of take the challenge of, okay, what's written here, how can I take this, and without making hardly any changes, how can I turn this into something beautiful that really emotes what the words themselves are saying, how can I make the music, it, take that meaning and just amplify it.
Right.
You know, and have it hit you sonically in a way that physically moves your heart and soul. Because I feel like the music, it's... the words do for your brain what the music does for your body and soul, I feel. And I think that there's something really magical about music and how it can influence you and has power over you. And I mean, it's just like there are some pieces that you listen to and it's just inexplicable. And to be able to give that to somebody that's put so much work into the lyrics of something is beautiful. And just being able to kind of dovetail that. And I just love that collaborative effort. Because, I mean, it has to be. I mean, I don't like the idea of like, hey, you know, crank me out. Like, I'm not a song factory. I don't want to do that. You know, I'd rather be included in the process and, you know, come together and create something beautiful and learn something about you in the process and forge a partnership.
And the thing is,
lead to 20 other songs.
Right. The thing I love about music, as we all know, and this is a little Doug Corey moment, is like, you know, you listen to a song and it means something to all different people. Mm. You know, yeah. Or that people would find this connection with it, like Into the Unknown from Frozen 2, and then all of these people are like, this is my motherfucking anthem now, you know,
Into the Unknown, Frozen 2.
Yeah, but it's just, it's so fun to, like, watch people identify with a song that maybe you wrote as something completely different, and their interpretation and their place in life and all of that. Now they're singing it in their shower because it means something different.
And there's no greater feeling, like, as a singer-songwriter to hear somebody else just be like, oh my god, I loved your song, and then they go into this story, and you're just like, wow, this is exactly what I wanted, but it came from a completely different place for me. And just to know that somebody, like, really connected, and they want you to know about it, and moved them to the point where they feel like they have to share that information. That's really the goal.
So if you have Apple Music, I believe you can just go listen to your CDs. And so that transitions into another sort of question is, what is that like for you that, like, I'm not individually buying your CD when I listen to it. We have paid for an Apple subscription, which honestly is pretty inexpensive when you think about all of the music and CDs that I have out there. So your art, to me, sometimes feels like I'm getting it for free.
Right.
And I hope that you get some compensation.
Yeah, and like as an artist, a lot of times it feels like you're getting it for free. Because the way that I have my digital distribution, like I've never done any like physical like CDs or anything like that, just because like the idea of keeping money wrapped up in inventory like that. When even cars don't have CD players anymore.
Right.
What the hell?
You should definitely make a record though.
Absolutely.
I want a physical record. I love it.
There's something really sexy about vinyl, I will say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the mod 60s. I feel like I'm sitting in New York.
I'm vintage.
Apartment. Yeah.
What were we talking about? Streaming.
That idea of your product is so widely available now.
Right.
But people may not know to look for
you. Yeah. And see, I came out in music like whenever streaming just kind of hit the scene. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of on that cusp where like people were still, you know, downloading full albums from iTunes, but you had some of these new things like Pandora. That was kind of the big one, and you had to like send in your stuff to even be featured on Pandora, and there was a whole dog and pony show to get in that game. But anymore, it's like you kind of just have to approach it differently as an artist. I mean, whenever you would put together an album and have it available online, you know, the kind of the exciting part was getting that first big check when, you know, all your friends and family and people that have been waiting on it kind of just download it. And that's just a big, you know, recoup on your whole project. But
now, do you get paid per download or is it?
That's the thing. So if you download the entire album outright, that's like, you know, I get close to 70% of those sales. With streaming, I get like a fraction of a cent per play, depending on the platform. And so that has to meet a threshold before I get the disbursement. So, you know, anymore, I'm not really playing around town. I'm not really promoting that music that much anymore. So like, I'll still get a check like once a month or like every couple months for like $30 or something. Mm-hmm. But, it's really minimal. And like sometimes like just passively through some kind of algorithm, I'll get picked up. Like, I was kind of, like, low-key famous in the Philippines for a hot second for no reason whatsoever.
You would be.
Yeah, but it's crazy to say that. I got, like, several DMs, like, asking for lyrics of my music from, like, Manila, and I'm like, you guys are awesome! Like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
But no, it's so funny the way the whole thing works. But as far as, like, you know, the compensation piece, you just have to look at it differently. I mean, you're only going to make money doing shows, and so... You know, in the past, you did shows to promote your music and get sales that way, but I feel like anymore, it's like you put the content out there, point people to your show, and that's where you need to be diversifying and bringing it to the next level, because it's just...
And also in a world where everyone can put their music up in some way, too.
Yeah.
I make the joke about how, I wasn't alive when the Beatles first came out, so let's call it NSYNC. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's something that I was around whenever they came out.
The Beatles of the 90s.
Yeah. It was... I only learned about NSYNC because it was played on the radio, because it came through, and there wasn't, like... 5 million outlets to hear different music. So all of a sudden, NSYNC.
Your musical taste was curated for you, essentially. Yeah. Unless
and
you really chose to
NSYNC is rising to the top because everyone is starting to learn that. But in a world now where I literally can just type in Apple Music, I want, I don't know, alternative, and I get 50 million options on how to do that, I feel almost like my brain doesn't sometimes want to learn new stuff.
Right.
Because there's a comfortability in, like, well, I know my classics.
I just like that song.
I want that to happen. And so I always feel that what a crazy push and pull that has to happen with artists now, especially in music, where... Or TV shows. I mean, fuck. Like, you go to Netflix, and I'm almost like... I almost don't watch Netflix sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, there's too much here.
It's just... The choice is overwhelming. And it's tough to go out there and find new music. And what's been happening now, like, several of my friends are, you know, kind of getting to the place where they're able to, you know, do music full-time based on, you know, these streaming income and just doing different things and just kind of, like, all these random gigs and stuff like that. But... part of the challenges that they're having is, like, getting on these playlists. So it's kind of like a pay-to-play type thing where it's, like, you pay to get on a playlist, or you have to have a certain number of... You know, your numbers have to look a certain way to be able to make it onto these playlists that get in front of more people. So, you know, it's interesting to see...
To almost have that be curated for...
Right.
And it's frustrating as a new artist or somebody that doesn't really have the ability to just throw my entire life at this. Yeah, it's tough, and I see it as a huge barrier for, you know, newer folks that are having to, you know, work 3 odd jobs just to be able to, you know, have
a
schedule that allows them
to
and just to be able to have the flexible schedule to do gigs and travel and things like that, because, I mean, being a musician shouldn't work with a regular 9-to-5 job. It's really hard, and I've been...
But
kind
I'm glad you exist.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, navigate that space and then maybe provide a template for other people that are similar to me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of figuring that out in this kind of second phase of my musical
journey. Would you want to be sort of like a teacher or mentor to people if there was something, like, put together on, hey, I'm looking to start this, and you would want to teach that? Or because I also know some people who aren't interested in teaching. They're only interested in sort of creating.
Yeah, I would, instead of I would say facilitate. I would love to facilitate kind of like an artist collective, because, like, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but the friend show that I want to do, you know, bringing in a bunch of different acts, like, I want to... that's very on my mind. Like, I'm very interested in collaboration and kind of just holding space for folks that are just like, I can do this, I'm clueless about everything else.
Right.
And then just bring in other people to just, like, cover each other's weaknesses and learn about each other and just create something beautiful. Because I feel like we have so much talent in this community, and I feel like there's so much pressure to be your own thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like everybody is just so hungry to collaborate, and there's just not... And maybe there is. Maybe there are several disparate forums for different things, but I would love to create this kind of, like, this kind of all-encompassing bubble for all of... Just a, you know, safe space, just to come hang out, you know, test out new material, get feedback, co-write.
I feel like a lot of people want that, and it never happens.
Yeah.
And
it's a hard model. I mean,
it is.
Part of the issue, excuse me, is...
dying on your own flame.
Yep, that. Yeah. And also, artists, as much as we love each other, are trained to be competitive. Yes. And the notion of having to accept that you both have a weakness and that somebody else may be able to fill it
right.
is a difficult notion. Like, I think that in their brains, it's very like, this idealistic utopia where we can all do this sounds great. But then in action, you actually have to say, like, I'm not good at that.
Right.
Help me fill that and spot. And that is hard for artists
to do. It's very difficult. I think that it's on us to help change that message and just mm-hmm. be like, it's okay for you to not be good at everything.
Right.
I mean, like, that's kind of how I'm doing this show. It's like, I'm doing it this way because I need to. I've never done any type of, like, stage production work before.
I think this is a perfect transition mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. talk about your right? friendship. So, let's call it early January.
Yeah.
You sent out a message mm-hmm. To a guy named Jason.
Yeah.
He was not able to attend that night. He... Mm-hmm. Was not feeling well. Myself.
Yep.
Emily Workus Circus. Mm-hmm. We love Workus her.
Circus.
Mm-hmm. Damron Armstrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then Molten Decadence, a.k.a. Ryan Webster.
Mm-hmm.
And Dustin, here, our lovely guest today, asked us all to meet because, and with no information about it.
Yeah.
And so kind of tell us about, like, your process on, because Dustin and I have only officially met for about now 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
We met on, I believe it was maybe the closing night of Jesus Christ Superstar?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so right. he okay. came into the space. Mm-hmm. You obviously know Justin Van Pelt.
Yeah.
And so we were all, bitch. I know, fucking
bitch. Talented.
And so Dustin and I started having a conversation that night, you know, and I saw that there were people that I liked mm-hmm. that were paying attention to him. And
uh-huh.
so that's just how those sort of gravitational things happen, you know, in an event where you're like, well, this is someone I don't really know, but people I know them, so...
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the business.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So, yeah, so tell us about how you sort of pick those people and kind of what your fringe process is.
Yeah, so this is the crazy thing, because, like, this whole... It's just really fallen into my lap, and I've just kind of been taking cues from the universe that, like, I gotta make this happen, just because, like, all of the right pieces have fallen into place, so I just feel like, you know, I gotta execute. So the way that it kind of came about, like you said, I just sent out a message to a few people that, you know... I either knew well or knew of, through other people that could help me actualize this vision. Didn't want to send too much out just cause, like, you know, the old bait and switch, like
mm-hmm.
get a couple beers in you and then lay it all on the table. So, but basically the concept of the show, so it's going to be based on my EP. It's like this kind of cabaret, in a cirque style. So, the EP is called Sad Clown, and so, you know, for the show, I'll be in kind of, like, clown makeup, you know, it's kind of have like, a circus vibe type thing, and, the way that I'm setting it up is, like, I'll be kind of, like, the narrator, MC, and I'll be kind of hanging out on the side of the stage, singing live, but then I'll bring in a different act for each song, and a different type of act, so there'll be, like, like dancers... I got a fire dancer, I'm trying to lock in an aerialist, so, like, different types of acts that you wouldn't typically see.
And I, of course, loved this concept, because mm-hmm. I was like, well, my space allows for mm-hmm. two of those things.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just to kind of create this, you know, where it's, my art is kind of the backbone, but it's not the end-all be-all of the show. Like, I want to feature, you know, other folks that... don't have the opportunity to get on the stage and get in front of these types of people. And, like, I think if this model does well, that we could do it, you know, other spaces around town and just bring in different acts potentially, you know, every night and just have, like, a different show happening,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just kind of... And it's really neat just to see other artists interpret, you know, my music. It's just really fun and in a way that I could never dream up because I'm not a dancer.
And you sort of talked about that night that we met, that you almost wanted to set a song in the lap of a dancer and say,
right, the go hand.
Create, mm-hmm. you know, how do you see this? Because mm-hmm. inside of your world and your brain, it could be all of these different
right.
representations. And I mean, if you can pull the fucker off, which is
yeah.
what I'm saying,
uh-huh.
you know, I think that it has the idea to be a really cool
I think
evening
so too.
Of, you know, a 60, 55 minute show
yeah.
in the
yeah.
fringe schedule.
Yeah,
yeah.
for sure.
I'm real excited for that. And I believe you officially paid your deposit, right?
Yep. So money's on the table. So
mm-hmm. Now you gotta create something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the music piece is almost done, and I actually just crazy, speaking of crazy coincidences, Justin Wilson, he owns Sound, or used to be Soundtrack Studios, now it's Sound 81 Productions up north. And out of the blue, he messaged me and was like, hey, I've just kind of been going through some stuff. I think I'm going to shut down the studio for sessions for a couple months and really just focus on mixing. Because I guess he's got some other irons in the fire and he wants to develop his mixing sound. But I've worked with him before. He's a genius. And he was just like, you know, I know that you have some active projects going on and I would love to offer my services as a mixer if you would trust me with that. And so that's one of the things that I've been most insecure about is just, you know, I've been doing all the production myself, but mm-hmm. that final mix out and kind of how everything like in the sound field is kind of orchestrated and like the levels, it's really important and it's going to be really important for this music specifically. But he just offered to do it for me just kind of as part of what he's working on.
Awesome.
And then within that same 24 hours, you reached out to me to do this podcast, and so I'm just like, oh my God, it's like just yet another thing.
The universe is screaming at you.
Right, they're just like, do it!
And it must be kind of nice to, kind of going back to what we talked about in the beginning, to almost have like this fire burning inside of you now, where there are sometimes that artists are like, they go into their dark period where they're like, and nothing is coming out, and yet you kind of are lucky enough to be in the opposite world right now, where you almost can't contain.
Oh my God, yeah, I feel like this has just been incubating for the past like 5 years, and I've been slowly, you know, riding over that time, but I mean, it's all coming together finally, and it's just like rapid fire.
And your hope for Sad Clown is maybe it's a 3-part series, is that?
Four-part
series.
Yeah, so... So Sad Clown would be EP number one, and then, and this would be all under my new, I don't think we talked about this, but I'm kind of dropping the Dustin Repeater. Yeah, so it's official, well, not like official, but I guess it's official now, once this comes out, but I'm going to be not getting rid of, you know, Dustin Repeater entirely, but I'm coming out with Felix, just kind of as the moniker of this organization, just to kind of depersonalize it a little bit and, you know, kind of allow for that collaboration. Like, I don't want it to be about me.
Yeah.
Again, acting more as like a facilitator.
That's such an interesting concept that, we talk about sometimes on the show, and this is going to be a gross comparison, not gross, like in nasty, but whatever, but how like Dustin, excuse me, we'll drop Dustin to become Felix. Mm-hmm. Is that the, you know, how almost like Julian, who was here 2 weeks ago, like, his alternate personality is Luna Flair.
Right.
Like, Luna drops everything that Julian is.
Right.
And, like, Luna then becomes this personality, for sure, almost. And I think that there's a lot of people out there who don't really realize sometimes what that is like to get rid of, almost, the personalness. Like, Cher is Cher. Cher can't help but be Cher.
Right.
Lady Gaga can only be Lady Gaga. You know, like, these people now are their personalities that they've put out there. But we all know that, like, Lady Gaga's name is not Lady Gaga.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's like, when the wig comes off, she's Stephanie. You
know? Yeah, right. Like, And I think that we kind of forget sometimes, externally, what that artist needs to happen to almost where you need to drop your personal side because you need to either protect that or that's not what you're wanting to put out there in the world.
Yeah, and I've thought a lot about it, and I think for me it's like I've been so, you know, back in the day when I was playing around town, it's just, you know, my skill set is not getting up on stage, like sitting at a piano and singing, and like, you know, some people are great at that, you know, it's, and they can put on an entire show just with them and an instrument, but that's not there are people that can do that so much better than I can. And so I was thinking, like, what is my skill set? What am I good at? How can I put on an incredible show that people will want to keep coming back for? I know the music is good, so let's just figure it out. Like, let's lily pad it. What can we do to kind of, you know, be 100% myself and do exactly what I want to do the way that I want to do it? Step one, get rid of anything having to do with myself. So like drop the identity, and just create this space for other people to be able to walk into. And so that's kind of Felix. Felix is just kind of a mantle I can take off and put on.
What is the biggest difference between Felix and Dustin?
For me, it's like, I just get so in my own head. And for me, it's about like, how much do I share of myself and like how much do I need to pull back? And so I think Felix is just kind of, it's just enough of what I want to give the audience without giving over too much. Because I feel like when I give too much of myself away, it it messes with me a little bit in a way that's kind of hard to describe. And it's just like, I don't know, it's like Jesus Christ Superstar, like giving too much of yourself and just kind of having that ripped apart. And not to compare myself to Christ, but...
You can if you'd like.
I mean, feel free. Hey, no, but it's very that. So it's, I don't know.
You don't have to have that answer. It's, yeah. It's just...
it's more of a feeling.
We had Sister Glamorama Ding Dong on, who was part of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, but we did not have Andy Chambers on.
We did not. Ah.
So, like, that there is also the time in which, like, we had to talk to Spencer Brown, but we couldn't really talk to Daisy.
Yeah.
And those are actually,
for sure,
as psycho as it sounds, different people.
Oh, 100%.
They have a different backstory, they have a different approach to
things. I hung out with both, and I only like one of them. I'm not going to tell you which.
Right.
I'm kidding.
But it's those kind of funny things this is maybe way too existential for this hour, but just talking about, like, you know, gender fluidity and stuff like that. I'm like, people can go in and out of so many different personalities and brains and sexualities and genders. And it's kind of whatever you're feeling that day.
Yeah.
Like you know, Daisy Bouquet is out on the road, you know, selling her shit. Or Trampolina, which is like, a whole different personality than that. And that sweet Spencer Brown has to sometimes juggle all of that in his head.
Bless his heart, he's so brave.
Love
you, Spencer.
To that point, you know, like, there could be a time where we interview Felix. You know,
today we are
interviewing Dustin, and we're getting to know Dustin. Yeah. But there could come a time down the road, you know, in a year or something, where Felix is sort of adoring this whole different idea and personality. Mm-hmm. And how different that might be to talk to you
about that. I feel like right now I'm still kind of, like, pregnant with Felix, and podcast is an audio medium, but I'm caressing my belly right now. But I think we're, like, in the second trimester with Felix. Like, we're excited about him. He's kicking, you know, but we don't really know what his personality is going to be like yet. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to develop him more and more as we get closer, and probably after the show it's going to develop. I mean, it's just kind of part of the process.
Yeah,
right?
Your friend's just sort of your coming out of
Felix. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of my test market, see if it's, you know, viable. I'm probably going to make some mistakes. I'm looking forward to failing forward.
Do you have an alternate personality, Courtney?
Not necessarily consciously. I think I have to. I mean, yeah. I think everyone on the planet does, sort of, know? I mean, I think you have that, like,
hello,
who
Instagram.
I am at work, who I am at, who I am at home, who I am, I mean, everybody's
Instagram
got that, sort
handy.
Of.
Mine is, like, food and other people's dogs, so what does that say about me?
Fair, I like all of those things.
I like food and other people's dogs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We almost stopped today when we were driving to the office and wanted to pet a dog.
Yeah, that's true, it was really cute. Yeah. So I think, and then strangely, because I now have little people in my life, then I have, like, who Violet's mom is, and that's based on who Violet is, and she's silly and crazy, and so I have to kind of put it, but then I have to be mother to both Isabel and little sister Ding Dong.
Because you yourself have a creature in your life that has an alternate personality.
She has an alternate personality.
You have
my
little
8-year-old
Chibata Ding Dong.
Yeah, my 8-year-old is the littlest.
Queen
Chibata
Ding Dong.
Yeah, she's the littlest sister of Perpetual Indulgence, as far as I know,
God,
in the country.
Fantastic.
So, or in the world, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I kind of have to be then that and make sure that I'm protecting that in a way that is different than, you know, you have to if you're Andy Chambers or Glamorama Ding Dong. Luckily I have Glamma to help with that, because he is her mother in that realm of things.
Her sister mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Her sister mother, yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think it's also, we are so used to, on this show specifically, kind of dealing with theater personality, that though you are injecting who you are and your emotions and those sorts of things, I mean, into a character, it's when it's your own art, I would imagine that is harder, because you have to, inevitably you're putting who you are and your emotions and your shit on the line, because it's your words and your feelings.
They don't have the luxury
you don't
of
have the
singing Andrew Lloyd Webber's
somebody else's
superstar,
right.
Where you are adorning Jesus and
exactly, yeah.
You know what that means. That, you have
like,
to be
I wrote
you.
This. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think you put more emotion into your lyrics or into your music because of that?
Ooh. So.
Well, there you go.
Right.
Sometimes.
Good
question.
that's tough. My process normally is to do the music first, just because that's like, that's what kind of comes to me first. I get like a hook in my head. I'll just hear something and then kind of run with it. And it's just like, I kind of have an obsessive personality in some ways. Right. And like, so if I just get that little earwig, it's like, I can't get out of my head. And I'm like, okay, I gotta flesh this out. And then it's usually, I kind of build on it. And like, by the time I get to the full, you know, template of the song, something has dredged to the surface, like a hook or, you know, some lyric or something. So I guess I first try and figure out like, what is the song trying to say? And I give words to that. And then I just kind of build in around it. So I think, just by nature of my I put probably more emotion into the music, but probably more effort into the words to be able to kind of do that justice.
Do you have a musical muse that you like hear in your brain, or who's inspired you the most? You're like, my damn self.
Yeah, right? No. I get really inspired by just the artists that I'm listening to. Like, I try and, you know, stick true to my own personal style, but also try and incorporate elements of what I like from, you know, current pop music. Or, you know, just like, I've been on a Fleetwood Mac kick lately, and, you know, kind of channeling a lot of just those vibes. And, you know, and the EP is kind of electronic and dancey and like a little circusy. And so it's just, it's fun trying to marry those two things together in a way that makes sense and kind of gives you that like Fleetwood Mac like Dreams vibe, but in this kind of electronic. So I hope it translates, but totally forgot what the question was.
Just who your muse is, but I would say right now it's current pop music, and like sometimes it's
It's my Spotify playlist. Like inspiration as far as my studio process would be Imogen Heap, hands down. Just because she's freaking brilliant. I've read up on her. I've watched her whole production of her Ellipse album, where she bought her childhood home and like built a studio in the basement. And then just created, and just watching her kind of chronicle that was just like so stinging inspiring. She's the reason why I got into, you know, doing my own production at all.
I think that it's fun. Evidently, everything's fun for me today. Maybe that's a tick I say. Yeah. I think it's fun. I'll deal with that. Yeah.
I think we had a breakthrough today.
Maybe.
This is actually for you.
I myself am on the couch. I've noticed all, and it kind of started specifically whenever I was in college, but the idea of musical theater as well. So, like, we've got, like, the Andrew Lloyd Webbers or whatever that wrote, like, these scores that then they kind of repeat through different musicals. And then, like, this thing started happening where, like, Duncan Sheik would go in and they would write Spring Awakening. Mm. Or, like, Gloria Estefan would write her life story.
Yeah.
So it's taking, you know, conga and the rhythm is going to get you and turning them into musical theater songs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there has been this really cool thing, again, that I love kind of following, of watching how pop music sometimes can be integrated inside of musical theater, and how different it sounds when you take ABBA and you put it in the musical Mamma Mia, and what it literally sounds like.
For sure.
To hear it try to sound like a musical, you know, because musicals need certain things.
You just gave me a very dangerous idea.
I love danger.
Oh my god, yeah. So, like, you kind of alluded to this before, but Sad Clown Felix, it's like this 4-part EP. So Sad Clown will be like the first installment that deals with the 5 stages of grief, and kind of grief has a way forward, kind of like shedding the old self and like evolving forward, and kind of like that process.
You literally taught me something, remember that?
Yes.
During the stages of grief?
Right.
Right. It was crazy.
So it's not about grieving per se, but it's just like the mechanism of grief as a way forward, and kind of like processing, not necessarily trauma, but just those things that are holding you back. I feel like a lot of times as adults we plateau, and then we either break through that plateau and hit another level, or we stay there and we just kind of live out the rest of our existence on the same wavelength. And so the goal of Sad Clown is for Felix to kind of get there, work to acceptance, and then kind of move into EP2, which is going to be working title Felix Rex, which deals more with, like, okay, now that I'm on this next level, like, I'm too big for my britches, and it's lonely at the top, heavy is the head that wears the crown. It's like, I've done all this work, and for what? So it's just kind of examining that, and then another breakthrough leads to EP3, and then EP4. So it gets kind of more broader in concept, and less personal, and more kind of, you know, how do I, what is my place in the universe, and how do we fit in this grand tapestry of life together. So,
what are the five stages of grief?
Oh, yeah. Good question, Corey. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. So, and I kind of have like a little, and I sent this to you. I don't know if you've read it yet.
I started reading your monologue.
The two muffins? Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, so I kind of have this little bit like that I want
to
interject.
I need you to send it to me, not taking a picture of the screen, because within the photo literally blurs out the center.
Oh, okay, great.
It's like a live photo maybe or something.
I promise I do work in technology. So, yeah, so it's kind of a play on that joke, you know, two muffins get put in the oven, one muffin goes, it's hot in here, and the other one goes, talking muffin. So the M. Night Shyamalan twist of this bit is that the muffin goes, hey, man, it's hot in here, and then the other muffin is just silent. And so muffin one kind of goes into this tailspin of an existential crisis, and so like he goes through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance in the oven, slowly rising to an internal temperature of 425 degrees. So... denial is, I can't be the only sentient muffin in this oven. Anger is, how can I be the only sentient muffin in this oven? Who did this to me? I'm alone next to this freaking Cro-Magnon. And then bargaining, please, giant white lady, is there anything I can do for you to get me out of this oven? Depression, oh God, there's nothing I can do to get out of this oven.
Right.
I am a muffin. And then acceptance, this is what happened to muffins. I'm a muffin. This is my lot in life. I accept my fate. Ding. Muffin's done.
I can't wait for like
and it's gonna be like super melodramatic and like played out. It's like I'm gonna
sure.
But I've never. But what a good metaphor for
and just going through like the five stages of grief and like 30
seconds
to a minute.
You know, I mean, taking that joke and then all of a sudden being like, this fucking muffin won't talk next to me. Why am I talking?
Exactly. What is the meaning of life?
Is it just to be a muffin?
You know. Sometimes it's good enough to just be a muffin.
Sometimes you just gotta fulfill your destiny.
Right.
Well, we are now into the last question and the answers portion.
Oh my God.
An hour goes so quickly.
That's crazy.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with our friend Dustin, and he was talking about his music career and his inspirations and getting to know Felix. So, back to Dustin, not Felix.
Yes.
What is your definition of real magic?
That's real magic. No. I think real magic is any force that can elicit an involuntary response. So I think music is magic. I think words are magic. I think getting your reflex tested at the doctor is magic. I don't know. It's like anything that moves you is magic. And I think that we have to be careful. Because in that sense, we're all magical, right? Like, our words are our spells. You know, it can really affect people in ways that we don't necessarily always understand. So I think we underestimate how powerful we are in that way.
Do you think you're powerful?
Oh, yeah. I'm here. Hi. Hello. Dustin Raker. Nice to meet you.
There you go.
Right.
Courtney,
one that's not
question?
So deep, but one that's not so deep. You are a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why?
Oh, man. I would, if I'm a new addition to the crayon box, I'm probably the new one that lets you erase stuff. You're like, it's okay to make mistakes.
The eraser crayon. Yeah. I love that.
And that is an answer.
Yeah, can we stop there? No, just kidding.
No. That's a good one. Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
The eraser crayon.
Yeah, sometimes it's not about adding more colors. It's just about, you know, let it, you know, dial it back.
Yeah, that's deep.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, that question became quite a deep question.
Right?
Yeah.
Whoops.
Wow.
Gotta wake up early, kids.
There we are. Happy Monday, ladies and gentlemen. What is something you were told you could never do or do well that you have accomplished or are in the process of accomplishing?
Ooh, I like this one. I don't like being told I can't do stuff. Typically, I don't do stuff I'm not good at.
Courtney's the same way.
Yeah, I don't really sport that much. Although I am playing some dodgeball right now, which I played for the first time yesterday on our team. It was terrifying, but it was fun.
A lot of people played dodgeball this weekend. Didn't Isabel play dodgeball this weekend? Is that what you're saying?
She did. Well, we were at that Urban Air place. Urban Air, which is not at all urban nor exterior air. So I don't know what that was about. But yeah, yes.
It happens, well, I don't want to say it happens at work a lot, but there have been a couple of times where I was told that I wouldn't be able to perform in the job that I am performing in by some folks. But I am, mm-hmm. and I'm doing really well, and I love it. So not music related at all, but I don't know. I think just a general theme of my life has been rising above when people thought I couldn't do something. Mm-hmm. Or just pivoting and doing something completely different in a much better way that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
I dig.
Mm-hmm. If you were a superhero, what would your power be?
Telekinesis. Just give me the Dark Phoenix powers. Let me just wreak havoc on the universe on a Wednesday because I can. I mean, if I would love to say something more humanitarian, but I have to go with my dark nature on this one. I want to be able to, like, I want to get my water bottle from the kitchen without getting up from the couch and destroy worlds.
Yeah. Right. Yep. You wake up in the morning. What is around you in your bedroom?
So my room is very cramped at the moment. I've got my queen size bed, and then I've got my desk, which is kind of like this L-shaped wraparound thing, and like it's just full of like equipment and monitors and like books and all this stuff. So it's kind of chaotic. Live with my very good friend Lance Pierce. Mm-hmm. It's a little cramped for both of us, but he's the best person to have around right now. He also works from home, and we kind of like we have compatible neuroses, and so I'd give up the space for the company. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of organized chaos is what I wake up surrounded
by. Organized chaos. That is pretty much my life. It's just organized chaos.
Yep, I would agree with that. Oh, let's see here. What problem or situation did TV or movies make you think would be a much bigger deal in real life?
Oh, puberty.
Tell.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was going to be insane. Like zits and, you know, smells and deodorant and gym. Mm-hmm. I thought like the locker room was going to be a lot bigger of a deal. Mm-hmm. It was fine. Like it's just like, you know, wear deodorant. Don't be stupid. Keep it in your pants. You'll be fine.
I've been watching this.
Consent is cute. You'll be fine.
Adult cartoon, you know, called Big Mouth.
Yes. Oh my god. Yeah. And like, I will say, like that show. Some of it is so true, but then it's so just true. Like the way that they would, you know, dramatize, you know, being a teenager on like Disney and you know. I was terrified of it growing up, and it was, like, not like that at all. So.
Me and my husband are really barreling through that show right now.
Yeah, I love Nick Kroll and John Mulaney. Yeah. Oh, my God, they're brilliant.
And we can't figure out if that show is meant for kids to watch, so then they know what's going on, you know, like, to be like, this is what's happening, or if it's for adults to look back and be like, oh, yeah, I remember.
I mean, I feel like a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're having a fun, you know, our own couch chats at home, if you will, about being like, who the fuck is supposed to watch this show?
Right? Because what is the audience here?
Because it makes me blush.
Everyone is uncomfortable.
11-year-olds masturbating for the first time, and you're just like, God!
Oh, God. Yeah.
But we all have our own little hormone monster.
We all do. It's part of, it's just a...
Anyway, I'm living for that show right now. That's what I'm passing out to on the couch these days.
Okay, fair enough. Is it my turn?
It is. No, it might be my turn.
I was like, I just
made that. I just interjected into all of that. Mm-hmm. What is the best piece of advice you would give yourself today? Not Dustin 5 years ago, or not Dustin in the future, but today you look at yourself in the mirror.
Probably you can do it. Just take a deep breath. You got it. You don't have to get it all done today. Let other people shine because they want you to. So I think that's probably the headspace.
That's a very optimistic piece of advice.
Yeah. I'm trying to be more optimistic to myself in 2020. I tend to be my biggest bully. So I'm doing a lot of work of trying to just, like, change my internal messaging. And, like, even this morning, you know, I started to kind of get nervous, you know, it'd be like, oh God, am I going to say the right things? Am I going to say it right? You know,
hopefully we've made just you
like,
comfortable enough.
Yeah.
To
and I'm like, it's Corey. Like it's going to be fun. This is going to be fun. And it has been just an absolute
now you
blast,
made a new
you
friend
know?
Today.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now you know us both.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in couch chat.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
We had to put up a sign to legitimize ourselves.
No, that's great.
That's right. Such a stupid sign.
It's so funny. Well, I wish I could talk to these kids on the first episode and be like, who are those people?
Who knows? I think I had different glasses. I must have been a whole different person. I have a different glasses in all of those pictures. Anyway. you're invisible for 24 hours. What do you do with your time? And you don't have to worry about, like, travel doesn't have to be included in that time if you, you know, need to be somewhere else.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like... He's like, I'd fucking sleep.
Right? I mean, it's just like, I'm not a creepy person. I'm not, like, I don't really get off on watching people do stuff. And, like, you know, I wouldn't want to follow somebody or, you know, well... I mean, like, I guess you could break into a bank, but, like, where are you going to put the money?
Right.
You know, like, at that point, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I'd probably go to the doctor and be like, what's going on? did I know? Like, because I there's this book called, I think it's Ghost Boy, that I read when I was, like, in junior high.
This
is
yes. Yeah.
It's like he was...
Get out of here.
Yeah, no, and yes. He, like, there was an electric blanket and something cosmic happened and he woke up and he was invisible and he's like, oh my god. And then he makes friends with this blind girl and they figure it out together.
Okay.
I totally read that.
I guess book. I would try and find a blind girl and be like, let's figure this out.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. What would you do for 24 hours? I'd find a blind
locate
girl.
A blind woman.
And hang out.
Travel
and
the world. Her. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I vaguely remember there being like this like Ukrainian woman that he went to go seek out because it happened to her too.
You've opened up a portal in my head. I totally read that.
Oh my god, I feel like it was the only like yeah, okay. That's
I just feel so bad. Cool. That
I have no idea
have
where that came from.
Things like that, and I'm like, that's not what I would do.
What would you do, Courtney?
I would go to like the Louvre or the Smithsonian and I would touch the art. I would like get up on it.
Gotcha.
You can't get up on it.
Okay, I wasn't thinking about restricted
look,
areas.
Right, like okay. I want to look at water lilies and all of that texture, like up
oh,
on it. Like,
yeah, no.
And I would wear gloves. I don't want to ruin art. Like,
right.
But I want to like
you just
see
poke
it.
A hole through the
right.
Lilies,
I just right? I want to yeah. see it closer than I'm allowed to get to it. Yes.
Yeah. No, I changed my answer. I'm going to. Well, I'm still probably going to find the blind girl. We're going to Area 51.
Yeah. Ooh, fair.
Just to really
yeah,
see
like,
what's going
the tea on,
there. On
Area 51. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would. I feel like I would jam pack my day. I would be like, I need to do this, this, and this. I only got 24 hours.
Right.
I need to do 2 hours here inside of the Sphinx, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, 3 hours here, I would, no shocker, I would completely organize my entire day.
Mm. Yeah, basically.
So then at
there.
The very end of it, I could go to sleep and be like, mm-hmm. That was my 24 hours, everyone.
Right.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Well, my last two questions are kind of about you and the furthering of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So, my last official question is there anything that you didn't have the opportunity to talk about? Anything you want to promote? Any words of advice for our listeners? Or really kind of the last sort of Dustin sum up, if you will?
I think we covered everything I wanted to talk about. I mean, we got the show coming up, we got the EP coming out. The EP is going to be called Sad Clown. It's going to be released under Felix, just one word, Felix. So, be on the lookout for that, and I'm going to point everything from my personal socials under Dustin Rapier to all that. So, yeah, and then come to Fringe, check out my show. Mm-hmm. I'm still looking for acts, and I want to have like a good, repertoire of people to pick from going forward. So, if you know somebody that would be interested in being involved in something mm-hmm. like this, and part of being part of a collaborative group of artists that do fun stuff together, and it's not just about my project. I want to help out on other people's projects too. Like, I'm really interested in collaborating right now. So
whenever we tag this from the thing,
mm-hmm.
if you
slide
him
a DM,
reach out to Dustin and collaborate.
Yeah,
and make magic. We're hoping that Dustin will be one of our Fringe shows here
mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
summer. We've got a couple of people who have specifically requested our venue. Hopefully,
mm-hmm.
so I think that we could.
Yeah.
We have a really stellar Fringe
in
2020.
Yeah.
July seems so far away, and also like next week.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Courtney and I wrote a show 3-4 years ago called Proud,
uh-huh.
which is about the gay, black, and civil and women's civil rights movements.
Mm.
And like That was crazy, and I don't even know, Courtney and I have talked about a lot, I don't even know what that show would look like in 2020, because in 2015, is that when we...
We did it, it was four, because it was, it, we literally, the last piece of, because the other thing was, is that we were in the midst of, like, Ferguson and the Black Lives Matter movement and all of that. So our
same-sex
last
marriage had just became legalized.
Yeah,
right.
Our last
year.
Piece.
So it was
2015. Yeah.
It was June of 15.
Our last piece was Hillary accepted the nomination because that happened in June, and I was like, "Look, we've got to stop writing. Like, we have to start rehearsing at some point." And so 15,
but
right into the 16 election. Yeah.
That whole show would be completely different.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
You know, we have the things that have came out. Mm. So I don't even know why I mentioned that, but it's crazy to be writing those shows as friends approaching because at some point you have to sort of sign off on this is my show.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I'm really excited to kind of see what comes out of Sad Clown.
Oh my God, it's going to be so fun. Like, don't let the name fool you. It's going to be a good time. So
And again, that condensed 55 minutes is...
Yep.
That makes people in their friend show have to be very laser focused sometimes about what they want to present.
Sure.
Because at 57 minutes, the house manager comes in and stops your show.
Yeah.
Like, it's, they are not messing around,
ladies
and gents. And then who would you like to hear from on the couch? If you were a listener, who should we have on that to learn a little bit about?
Have you had Calvin Arsenio on?
Nope. We haven't.
Oh my God, he's a big part of the reason why I got...
He's been in our building a few times.
Oh yeah.
He was really instrumental in, pun intended, getting me involved and really pursuing this and like putting a fire under my ass. Like, okay, you can do this. I did it. You need to. And so, get Calvin in here.
I would love to talk to Calvin.
If maybe next year, like EP number two, Felix Rex, maybe you can get me and Justin Wilson in here to get all my mixing and stuff to talk about, because he's very like... into the nerdy science aspect of all that. So he'd be a fantastic person.
Love that. And maybe next year we can talk to Felix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe he'll have a personality.
See what Felix looks like in
We should have like a Felix like 1 year birthday party or something.
That's right.
I love
Felix
cake.
Turns one. Oh, me
that's
too.
Right.
Never had a cake I didn't like. Nope. That's not true.
But what cake did you meet that you didn't like?
Flan is gross.
You had cake the other day you didn't like.
What cake?
From the downtown market in the box.
Listen, I would have loved that had they not have sold that shit as a brownie.
Oh, right. That's right. That was the problem. That's
truth in advertising.
I will eat a cake, but I not whenever I think it is
not
supposed
to be. Brownie?
Well, I love a brownie, but not when I think it is supposed to be.
Yeah.
That. Okay.
I was pretty let down from that.
I know.
Brownie was very, very moist. Thin cake.
That's valid. That's valid.
Yeah. And what a way to end couch chats. thank you so much, Dustin,
for being on the show.
That was a very quick hour. I love whenever I look down and I'm like, shit, I gotta wrap up. check out Dustin Rapier on iTunes right now until Felix comes out. Mm-hmm. So go and listen to what he's doing. Continue to subscribe to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney. And next week, we will have a very special guest on. Perhaps it might be my husband to talk about our official 1 year anniversary.
That's right. Your first,
I finally
first
get
one
my 1 year anniversary next year because I got married on Leap Year Day.
Yep.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
So
4 years, 1 year.
Yeah, we're so you are 4 year, 1 year. Mm-hmm. But that is hopefully maybe my goal is to bring him on to talk about that. If not, there'll be some other
wonderful voice
coming
creature
to your ear holes.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to Fringe, Dustin.
Yeah,
thanks for being
me too.
On the show.
Awesome.
All right,
guys.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.